Quinn Slobodian, welcome to the podcast.
Happy to be here.
I want to talk a little bit about this crisis of the 1970s, because the story that we're conventionally told is that there's this era of stagflation, right? Mm-hmm. There's stagnant wages and inflation that occurs at the same time. Mm-hmm. The previous economic consensus from John Maynard Keynes, what we call Keynesianism, theoretically said that an environment of stagflation should be impossible. And as that was occurring in the 1970s, the groundwork is laid for neoliberals to make this argument and to shift elite consensus. Leading up until that point, there's many years of them lobbying, building institutional power, thinking about these things. Does that story actually compute? Because I feel like this history is mostly told by liberal economists and historians. And that is, in some cases, directly coming from the Hoover Institute, for example. How should we consider that crisis of the 1970s?
I mean, I think it continues to be probably one of the most important and live subjects of interpretation and reinterpretation by historians that we have. So it's one of those examples where the stakes of figuring out the story of the 70s is actually really relevant for the present.
So it means a lot.
There's a lot at stake. Yeah, it's not just an abstract academic kind of like getting it right for the history books kind of thing. Facing inflation after COVID was, you know, this very high stakes competition, even within the Democratic establishment, about whether or not this was an outcome of high levels of spending on things like the IRA and COVID relief packages. Or was it just a supply shock related to, you know, the disruption of global trade and people's, you know, higher consumer demands, ordering things from home and so on. So what you make of the 70s in many ways is like what you make of the last couple of years. And sort of the question of whether or not you can do expansionary policy without being punished by the inflation on its heels is like a very important question. And arguably, you know, Bidenomics kind of won the battle but lost the war, because we did see a kind of a decline in inflation, but sort of not soon enough for all the voters to kind of change their assumptions, or for interest rates to follow in ways that, you know, would change people's car loan payments quickly enough, and mortgages and so on. But the 70s, I mean, there's a lot going on there, right? I mean, I think you need to see it globally. Because I mentioned the kind of oil crisis and the new international economic order. Well, what the oil crisis is eventually resolved by is by the quadrupling of the oil price. So Saudi Arabia in particular, you know, comes to a settlement with the United States that says like, okay, we'll stop the embargo and the slowdown, but we want oil to effectively be worth much more. So there's just like this rush of so-called petrodollars that now went to Saudi Arabia and then were recycled back out into the world economy, and were basically being lent out to especially industrializing nations, especially places like Mexico and Brazil, at, you know, relatively low interest rates. So the groundwork for the kind of third world debt crisis in the early 80s and the kind of Volcker shock of 79 was being laid partially by a kind of a global set of activities, meaning that it was more profitable for people to loan money to country X, Y, and Z than it was to loan to a domestic American company. What the Volcker shock does in 1979 is to effectively bring all that capital home and, you know, incentivize people to save, make it harder to take out loans.
The Volcker shock, for people who are not familiar, this is an unprecedented increase to interest rates. It goes up to, I think, 20%, if I recall.
Yeah,
close to 20%. Paul Volcker is the chairman of the Federal Reserve in the United States at the time.
Exactly, yeah. And so even now there's this debate about what he was up to. Was he trying to, you know, wipe out development dreams in Latin America? Was he just trying to salvage the remains of some kind of settlement inside the United States? Was he the last Keynesian, or was he the first neoliberal? There's a lot of things that people who even share a lot of the same sort of priors actually can't agree on.
The story that I was always told is that he was taking influence from Hayek, that he was trying to tighten the money supply because of inflation. You know, I remember hearing these when I would get like deep in the libertarian archives, these stories of like Hayek as a young man standing in, I forget the name of the town square in Austria, in Vienna. And they're printing money. The money printers are below street level, and he hears